Yeah, I put them online, so you can.
I could have, because I didn't make last week, so how did you do it?
Well, it was in the bottom of the email I sent out. There's a link. And you just click on the link, and it'll take you to that page, and then the MP3 files. You can listen on your computer.
Email.
Today's email.
I don't know, I delete them.
Before or after?
I read them and delete them.
I'll send you the link separately.
Oh, okay.
Do you see an email coming from me?
Okay.
You can delete it, but first read it. And then delete it.
It's all the way at the bottom.
Oh.
An MP3.
I probably never got that far.
Well,
okay, so it'll say that, and then it'll let you.
You can listen on the computer or put it on your iPod. It's an MP3.
It'll do it on your computer.
It'll do it on your computer.
Oh, okay.
You just click on it. It'll open up automatically.
Okay.
Pretty simple. You know, nowadays with spam, it's unbelievable. You know, thank God I use Gmail. They have very good spam filters. So it kind of, I know the feeling. You get an email, you just want to delete it because you have no idea what it is. But so. Good evening.
I was coming south on the 5, north of the 134, and I'm not exaggerating, 30 cop cars going north on the 5, sirens blaring north on the 5, followed by like maybe 10 fire trucks, and a whole bunch of evidence.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Something's happening. Like, you remember that they had that train wreck? I was caught up in that too, as it happened. Like, I wasn't in the train wreck, but you know in Chatsworth? I was like traveling somewhere and got caught in traffic on account of that. Mm-hmm. And
this is the Republican campaign on their way?
That's yeah, that's what it is.
That's the top of LA Times, yeah.
Maybe it's just too new for. I was listening to the radio. You think it was.
Yeah, nothing yet.
Not just a lot, but. You don't have 30 cop cars for a
rob. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe it's a drill.
Not a donut shop's having a big sale.
Are you doing something major?
All right. Good evening, everybody. Tonight we begin Soul Quest Lesson 4. We're going to watch the movie first, and then we're going to do a review of last week's class. And then we're going to give an overview of tonight's class, and then we're going to get into the thick of it. So let's take it away.
Reincarnation. To most people, it just doesn't sound like a Jewish idea.
I'm not sure I believe in that whole reincarnation thing.
For as far as when I die, I do not believe in reincarnation. So I don't think I was ever anything.
So then once you're dead, you're dead.
No. Stay where you are, you stay who you are.
I don't think that Jews believe in reincarnation as taking another body. Whether your soul takes another position somewhere else, maybe. I don't have a strong feeling.
But I certainly don't hold any truck with some of the Eastern religions which have me coming back as a turtle or a chicken or anything like that.
If you did come back, who would you want to be?
Miss Baby, maybe. Am I an artist? Cousin Alex. Why? I want to be Superman. I want to be with Barack Obama.
I don't believe that you become somebody else or a Porsche, which I kind of want to become if I do become something, a really cool hot sports car.
So have you been here before? Judaism has some surprising things to say about the interconnectedness of souls across the generations. We'll find out more in Lesson 4 of Soul Quest, the journey through life, death, and the universe.
So for a moment, I just came to my mind as we were looking at this short film. Last week I also played a short film, but the question was asked last week, what do you believe in afterlife? And everybody almost unanimously said, yeah, we do believe in some kind of afterlife. In other words, this is not the end, there's something coming afterwards. Yet when you ask about reincarnation, it's nah. How could that be? And I'm thinking in my mind, the afterlife is no more or less esoteric or unbelievable than reincarnation. Once you make that quantum leap that there's something after our physical existence now, then why can't there be something after that something? But anyways, that's just an observation I just made. So that before we begin, we're going to do a quick recap of last week's lesson, which is, last week we discussed about the transition from life to death. And we discussed how, talking about transitions, life in general holds many transitions. Birth is a transition from coming into the world. A person turns 3, a person turns bar bat mitzvah, a person goes to college, a person changes a career, a person moves from one location to another. They're all transitions in life. And transitions are always difficult. They may be good, they may be very beneficial, but more often than not, a transition is something that is difficult to go through. And we discussed how the ultimate of all transitions is the one from this life to the afterlife. Good evening. And while transitions can be painful, scary and painful, the process of death and the afterlife are ultimately positive for everyone. Number 3, we discussed how the focus should be on life and preparing now, fulfilling our life's mission and keeping our priorities straight ease the transition. Transition ultimately is the culmination of our life's goals and moving on to the next leg of the journey, and by doing what we have to in this life, good evening, we ultimately make the transition an easier one because the soul is ready. The soul is not ready. A person had not completed what they were supposed to, then it can be a little more difficult. The pleasure of the afterlife is inherently a godly one, transcending all worldly experience and comprehension. This is why the soul must undergo a process of disassociation from the body and world before experiencing paradise. And we discussed how there's in Judaism, the different segments of mourning mirror the different levels of the soul disassociating itself slowly from its physical experience in the body. We have, for the first 3 days, we read some Kabbalistic texts, then we discussed how the 7-day period, it disassociates at an even greater level. We read some more Kabbalistic texts about that process. Then we discussed the 30-day period, and finally, the 12-month period. At that point, the Kabbalistic text that we read says that the soul and the body are finally on any physical level have disassociated themselves one from the other, and the soul is on its next leg of the journey. We discussed how paradise is a spiritual experience, and we mentioned the fact that a human being gets a lot of enjoyment and pleasure from a community, from being with for unity, being with people that they love, being with family, being with friends, being with community, nationhood. These are all things that humans crave, that humans gravitate towards, and that make a person feel whole. A lonely person is a broken person. A person who feels that he has associations with others on any level is wholesome. So we discussed how paradise, in essence, is the soul coming full circle and coming together with its godly source, and therefore that, in essence, that unity coming together with its source is the spiritual enjoyment and pleasure and paradise of sorts. And thus we accomplish a greater union with God on earth, but we appreciate and experience the effects of our work more in heaven. Everyone has a share in paradise because the soul's essence is godly. Life and death only serve to reveal this bond, but can never sever it. We discussed how ultimately, because you know, life is not a test, it's a mission. And because it's a mission, it on some level it will accomplish some part of its mission. And therefore on some level no soul is irredeemable, and every soul will attain paradise. And then what we talk about in this week's lesson is what happens if it doesn't completely fulfill that mission. That's what we're going to be talking about a little more tonight. And our main focus ultimately must be on living life to its fullest, a life full of meaning and mitzvot. Because we discussed how in this physical realm, the life within the soul within a body has the ability to accomplish, to transform, change, and actually do more than it is able to once it passes on. Once it passes on, although it gets the benefit of everything that was done while it was one unit with the body, at that moment it's not able to do anything anymore, and it just begins to appreciate how precious every moment and every opportunity was while it was here with its body and what it could have accomplished. So tonight we begin with a quick true or false based upon the previous three lessons. At death, the body ceases to exist, but the godly soul lives on in the next world. That would be
true.
Good. The soul exits the body in a quick, simple, and smooth process. We discussed this last time. That's false. It's not necessarily the case. Purgatory is a place where God exacts punishment for man's wicked ways. Based upon what we discussed last week, it's false. Right? We discussed how purgatory is a purification process. It's a good thing, cleansing. It's not a negative thing. It's not a punishment. It enables the soul to move on. Hell is not a physical place, but a process that the soul experiences to cleanse itself from its misdeeds. The true reward of man's positive actions here on earth can only be experienced in the afterlife.
No.
That's actually a trick question.
No. Well, the good deeds that we do are supposed to certainly help us in the afterlife and give us those experience points. But only is hard for me because your positive actions here on earth, you can experience good stuff.
Well, let's see what they say. That's a trick question. I'll tell you why. If you remember last week, we said that the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah itself, right?
Yeah.
So that would mean that this is partially false. The word only doesn't belong there. Because there is a certain element of the mitzvah that we experience in this world. So we're going to have to fire the editor. The pleasure of Gan Eden is equal to watching the Super Bowl on a brand new HD program. Alright, depends who you ask. So let's start with the introduction on page 61. Ruby, please.
Was I someone else in a different life? Do souls return to this world in another body to complete the unfinished business? Can a previous life affect my present and my future? In Lesson 4 of Soul Quest, we will explore Kabbalah's unique understanding of reincarnation. We will discover a complex system of interconnectedness between souls and the ways that one soul influences and even spawns another.
So often there's a preconceived notion that reincarnation is a concept or a process of being recycled. Nobody likes being recycled. It doesn't sound good. Recycled, in essence, gives us the notion of being trapped in a repeating cycle and being haunted by the past and having to deal with issues that a soul or a previous existence may have experienced. But we're going to be discussing tonight how that is untrue. Judaism's take on reincarnation is that it's part of a greater whole. There's a big picture here. And ultimately, reincarnation is a process that allows us to be united with a common goal with other people, with previous generations, future generations, yet at the same time it allows us to possess a uniqueness, a unique soul with a unique spark and a unique mission. So although recycling or reincarnation may give us an idea that, hey, I'm just repeating something that was done before, Judaism says no, that's not at all what it is. It's more about connecting, and we're going to explain this a little further on, connecting with the big picture of many generations, past, present, and future. And more importantly, the process of reincarnation does not in any way, shape, or form diminish our uniqueness, our unique mission, our unique soul in this present lifetime. So there's a unique element that is always found in every single human's existence, reincarnation or not. Last week we discussed how we discussed death and the afterlife. And this week, the concept of reincarnation, in essence, combines the present with the past and the future. And let's go to learning activity number one on page 62, where we're going to start off with asking some basic questions about reincarnation. Okay, so you have true or false. Let's take a pen or a pencil and circle the best answers to these questions about reincarnation. Number one, belief in reincarnation is a basic part of Judaism. True. Based upon what I've just been discussing, that would be true. Reincarnation means that the same soul that once inhabited one body returns to inhabit another body. Tell me what you think, true or false?
Probably true. You haven't told us what it is yet, but it runs out of that.
If you believe in it, then it's got to be, it doesn't come back to you. You're gone.
Reincarnated souls do not have their own identity, but share their identity with someone who lived in a previous lifetime.
I think if the soul relies on the body and the body relies on the soul, then if the soul goes to a different body, it's a different thing.
Okay, so let's number two. The answer to almost every single one of these questions is not clear, true or false. Belief in reincarnation is a basic part of Judaism, yes. Two, Jewish reincarnation means that the same soul that once inhabited one body returns to inhabit another body. That's false, because the soul, there's some element of the soul that will never be reincarnated. We're going to be discussing in a few moments how there's only offshoots or branches of a soul that can be reincarnated. But the essence of a soul, once it's been on this earth, and as we mentioned before, it's impossible for a soul not to complete part of its mission, therefore that part of the soul will never be incarnated. It's going to move on to the next leg of the journey. There's only an offshoot or a branch that can be reincarnated. We're going to be discussing this at length tonight. Number three.
So part of it can go into another body.
That's what we're going to be talking about. Yeah.
So part of it can go into another body, part of it doesn't.
A spark. The core element of the soul, no, but sparks or branches can. We're going to be discussing this a little more at length. Reincarnated souls do not have their own identity, but share their identity with someone who lived in a previous lifetime. That's false. They do have their own identity, actually a new identity. The purpose of doing good in one's current lifetime is in order to be reincarnated as a higher person of higher status in future reincarnations. Some of you may be familiar with this concept. It's actually a concept that's found in Eastern religions. In India, for instance, they have a caste system. And the idea of reincarnation in India is that if you're of the lower caste, if you're good and you behave, you'll reincarnate into a higher caste, into a higher level. That in Judaism is false. We don't believe in that. We don't believe that you know there's that you that idea is to reincarnate into some kind of higher level. The process of reincarnation, as I mentioned earlier, is to rectify something that may have not been done before. And finally, souls are reincarnated in order to punish the soul for sins done in the past life. And that is also false. So our goal tonight, as you can tell from these questions, is to clarify the Jewish idea of reincarnation. First and foremost, many people are unaware that reincarnation is even part of the Jewish belief system. And then, secondly, even if it is part of the belief system, exactly what reincarnation is, many people are also unaware of. Some people may come to the conclusion that it's a punishment. Some people may come to the conclusion it's to in order to move up in life. And then there are other religions that believe in reincarnation as well, that a human being can reincarnate as a turtle or something. Now, that's totally out of the scope of this class, and for all practical purposes, if that happens, the only time that will happen, in other words, for a human soul to be reincarnated in anything other than a human body, it's a very painful experience for that soul, because after all, it is a human soul. So that is generally never the case. The case of a human can only, or a part of that human soul will only reincarnate into another human as a process of rectification for something that may have not been done previously. Only in extreme circumstances can a soul actually be reincarnated into a form of something other than a human, and in that case, it may actually be in very rare circumstances for someone that has done something terrible in life, but that again is very rare and never happens for all practical purposes. And finally, the idea behind reincarnation is meant to infuse our present life with greater peace, trust, and confidence. And we're going to work out these themes as we move around. So let's first start with reincarnation. What is reincarnation? Let's start with text 1 on page 63. The basic idea of reincarnation is unfinished work in one's life becomes the basis for new life. And that can be fed. Let's read text 1. Harry.
Now that even though you will frequently find references in many places stating this person was reincarnated into that one and subsequently into someone else, do not err by thinking that the original soul is the one that is reincarnated. Rather, a number of root souls without limits were divided into souls, and in each of those root souls there are a number of sparks of souls without limits, and in each incarnation some of these sparks are rectified, and those that are not rectified return to be reincarnated and become rectified. But those sparks that have already been rectified rise up to the spiritual level that benefits them.
Rectified means to correct. So let's talk about this for a second. We spoke about, the key word here is something called a root soul.
A root or stem soul. The idea behind this root or stem soul
is that it is able to generate other souls. Now, only a certain amount of root souls or stem souls. We're going to discuss their origins. Now,
wait, I want to make sure I'm set up. Period?
Yeah.
Like for all eternity, once a soul, like if you're a stem cell.
Like a stem cell. We're going to compare it to a stem cell.
If you're a stem cell, and now you're in this body, you're now not the root of other souls.
Well,
they then spark off from you.
The stem souls are able to create and spark
more stems.
Other souls.
But you're saying there's only a few roots. The original.
Well, not a few. Several hundred thousand.
Okay, but there's a finite number that's predetermined.
Right.
Kind of like how
But don't forget, a root soul is not any more special than another soul.
No, I'm not suggesting that.
It's just, it's a Kabbalistic understanding of where this, and the root of all roots is Adam.
Sure.
Goes back, right.
Yeah.
It all started with Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Then there became a tree process.
Mm-hmm.
And then, similar to a human body.
Mm-hmm.
Like some souls are stem cells that create other cells. And the stem cells have the entire DNA of all the cells that they create that's found within them. According to the Kabbalistic understanding, the spiritual world and the physical world mirror each other. So whatever is found in biology, there's a similar concept in the spiritual realms. And this would be akin to a stem cell. Stem cell, stem cell. So... the stem souls generate other souls. And these souls, every soul is made up of many segments, of sparks of sorts. Let's use our imagination here. And every human being, every soul, has a certain amount of sparks or segments of that soul that it must uplift during the process of a lifetime. Whatever parts of that soul a person managed to uplift during his or her lifetime, those are the souls those are the sparks that continue to the next leg of the journey. And remember, there's never a soul that doesn't accomplish something. Everybody on some level accomplishes something. It's only the sparks or the elements of a person's mission that he or she was not able to accomplish or fulfill for whatever reason, that then goes through the reincarnation process or the rectification process, which means basically it has to come back in order to fulfill the stem soul's mission. Every stem soul has a certain mission. All the souls that come from that stem soul, right, are part of the cosmic or the big picture for that stem cell. So it's just a process of reincarnation until at some point its entire mission will be completed. So we have here a global mission, a much larger mission that's shared by many people together, and then we have every person that has a unique segment of that mission. We're going to develop this concept. Okay, so let's take this to the next level. So the process of reincarnation ensures that all the sparks eventually fulfill their potential. So getting back to what I mentioned earlier, the idea of a stem soul is not that a soul in its entirety reincarnates and that a person now is being recycled. What it means is that the segments of sparks that were not able to complete their mission last time now come back. But in addition, there's also a unique energy that's infused simultaneously that the world has never seen. So although a soul may be comprised of certain sparks of the stem soul that have not yet completed its mission, at the same time it's also comprised of entirely new elements that the world has never seen before. It's a new soul in essence. So the reincarnation process contains a new soul in addition to sparks that now need to be reincarnated and need to be rectified. So, any person, in essence, has both their unique dimension, new energy, new soul, with a unique mission, in addition to whatever mission it needs to accomplish based on a previous sparks that are now attached to the new soul.
Aside from the new soul, different sparks come together in the same body?
Yeah. Now you have to look at a stem cell as a candle. You take a candle, you can light millions of candles, it doesn't really diminish the original candle. So using that metaphor in a spiritual sense, a stem cell, right, in essence can germinate and create as many souls as necessary.
A stem cell in a person? I mean, what happens when that person dies and what happens?
Well, we're talking now about a stem cell.
Stem cell, yeah. Well, is that, that's a, in a person that's alive? So if that person dies, then what happens to this stem cell? If it's supposed to
the soul will never, it doesn't make a difference. The soul is not dependent upon a physical human body.
This stem cell, it doesn't have any dependence on a human body?
No, its ability to reproduce other souls is irrelevant in which body it's in.
Oh.
Because it's a stem cell. Just like any soul, in essence, spiritual part of God Himself. We mentioned this last week. In other words, the body is a temporary vehicle for the soul to accomplish X, Y, and Z for a certain period of time. The soul was here beforehand, and it's going to continue. And as far as the stem soul is related, if it needs to reincarnate, part of the soul will continue. Part of some sparks will go into the reincarnation process together with a new soul element. And that new soul element comes from the stem soul. And a stem soul is able to, like a candle, reproduce as many souls as necessary without being diminished. Just like a candle, you can light millions and millions of flames from one flame, and it doesn't take away in any way, shape, or form from the flame.
So how often does this happen? How often does the concept of reincarnation happen? Because it sounds like, I mean, from what you're saying, essentially we could all be some.
Essentially, we all probably are some. We have souls. Every single one of us has a unique new element, new soul.
Mm-hmm.
But every single one of us also has attached to that new soul sparks of a previous soul that needed some kind of rectification. And that's part of our life's mission, tied to our stem soul. Now, some of us may come from the same stem soul, some of us may come from a different stem soul. So some of us may have common global mission, although every single one of us has a different unique mission, some of us may share a common global mission, some of us may not.
On a consciousness level, we're talking theory, but we're not getting into the consciousness of it. Does that spark have any connection to its prior soul in life? Or for all intents and purposes, does a soul have one shot, go on, and maybe some offshoot of it just attaches to another body to complete something, but does that have a consciousness?
You're asking, does the reincarnated segment of the soul have any consciousness and remember something from a previous life? You're asking a very valid question, and that is part of, there's a big argument within Jewish source texts themselves regarding whether reincarnation is a Jewish concept. There are some great minds and thinkers that said not necessarily. Part of what bothered them was that specific idea. If indeed we are reincarnated creatures, then how is it possible that we absolutely have no recollection of anything that happened before?
Maybe we do.
Well, at least on a conscious level.
In the writings, does it say that we should or shouldn't?
Well, we don't.
We don't.
And that was part of what bothered some of these Jewish thinkers.
Doesn't that also go to the question of that none of the function of the physical house and the hardware of the brain,
that
it can only be created and refined and captured in the next.
Right. And that's the ultimate answer.
Right.
And that's the answer. So you asked the question and you gave the answer. The answer, what Michael was saying was that according to our understanding of the soul, that it's a spiritual, entirely spiritual entity that is a divine energy, and it's not connected in any way to a real physical existence. Therefore, whatever prior life the soul may have experienced before in its physical realm will not project itself into the spiritual realm, in as much as that it will be carried over into another person. This is the Arizal's understanding. Ari, who was a 15th century mystic, this is his understanding of, this is what we're, a lot of our readings, his understanding of the soul is that it's entirely spiritual, without any physical dimension, and therefore it will not carry over any previous knowledge or any previous physical occurrence.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it's a very physical function.
Maybe when your soul leaves body A,
so what is this spark that's coming back to correct something that it hasn't fulfilled?
Entirely spiritual.
But how does it know it's fulfilling something if it doesn't have a memory?
Ah, and we're going to be discussing that a little later. That's what we discussed a little last week also. That occurrences and opportunities in life that are placed in any person's path, that's where divine providence comes in. We're assuming that God puts things in our sphere because that is, in other words, you're born and you live in Southern California because this is where, or you moved from New York to Southern California, we're assuming because there is something for you to do here. Whereas somebody who's born and lives in India, they have something, and if at some point in their life they move to another country, we're hoping that circumstances in life are tied into our life's mission.
I think I'm trying to tie for myself reincarnation in with consciousness. If when we die and there's some spark of us that goes somewhere else, for all intents and purposes, we're still gone. It's not like we're coming back in another body, Bridie Murphy, that sort of thought. We're going on somewhere, and maybe there's some trail element that's hanging around, but whatever consciousness there was won't be there.
Not the you're precisely right. The kind of consciousness that we experience now in this lifetime, no. Because we're experiencing a physical lifetime. And that whole element of reincarnation is very spiritual. Bruce, you had a question.
Life is a mission and not a test. There's not good rectification or soul repair. Suggests that something happened at one point in time that was incomplete, and that would come back a second time to fulfill that mission, which would suggest that there is some sort of memory from that conscious or maybe unconscious.
If there's no memory, what's the point of correcting?
They're coming back to build something that they did not fulfill in another time.
Right. And
that suggestion of that something has been carried over.
Right. So what's being carried over, in essence, is the need. It's more, I would say, more a need to accomplish, certain things based on the need to rectify whatever was done in a previous lifetime. So again, we're going to hope and assume that in this next lifetime, the experiences and the opportunities that come our way will enable us to complete what was previously incomplete, number one. Number two, we're given a certain amount, we're given tools also. The concept of mitzvot, doing good deeds, and being able to accomplish through positive things are the tools that enable us to accomplish. There's no clear instructions, that's for sure. You're not born with a set of instructions saying, hey, this is the exit you missed last time, don't miss it again. That's part of it, yeah.
It's like a test that you get to take over again. I know life's not a test, but like a test you get to take over again, they don't tell you which answers you got wrong.
But you're not sitting for the same exam again. No, that's just this. They said just a small spark may go, but the basic part goes somewhere else.
The small spark goes to the part that
that's where divine, but that's where divine providence comes in. That's where divine providence comes in. There's a concept in Judaism that God doesn't play tricks with us.
God has a plan for us, and the ultimate goal is to reconnect with God.
Right.
And He has to fulfill a certain mission. And to fulfill that mission, my suspicion is the Kabbalah that you don't return
anything. You've come full circle, right?
But should you go that full circle, you only come back to make corrections.
And
they said
no more corrections to make, you get your A.
But I don't see how you're coming back to make the corrections if the main
thing
is going on and there's a spark hanging back.
Well, that the spark that comes back, again, so that's...
But that's not me anymore, but that's somebody else at this point.
But and that, and right, but again, you talk about me, him, her, we're talking about souls. The soul, right, has an ability now to make up what wasn't done last time, or correct what was done wrong last time. Now the question that's, I think, part of what's troubling here is that how do I know? So that's where, you know, our belief system tells us that God doesn't play games with us. He's not, and if God puts us in, and that's what we discussed this in the first lesson, that's why it's important to recognize that opportunities or chances that we come across, it's important to try to recognize and take advantage of these opportunities. So if somebody comes your way and you have an opportunity to help him or her, right, for instance, this may be your rectification. So help. Or if an opportunity comes in life to do something positive, it's important to try to take advantage of that opportunity, because who knows, maybe this is the entire reason why you were reincarnated, and part of your mission, life's mission, is to uplift these sparks. We don't know, but what we are assuming is that situations in life are created and put in our path because this is part of our life's mission. If something completely alien happens to a person, then, well, I guess something completely alien will not happen to a person. And if something is, the Talmud says that in a kodesh baruch hu baba trini al b'yosha, God does not create situations that are beyond our ability to accomplish, to handle. We won't do it, because that would be what's a good word?
Cruel.
That would be extremely cruel. To throw something at somebody if you know he can't handle it, and God doesn't do that. God is merciful. God wants us to accomplish our mission. God helps us. He's there for, you know, to encourage us along the way. So, although we don't have clear direction, because had we had clear direction, then this life would be void of meaning. That would be similar to, if you remember, we discussed when a person is born, before he's born, he's taught the entire Torah in the womb. And he's made to forget it. Because if he doesn't forget it, then there's no meaning in life. If you know exactly what direction you should take, and you know exactly what your life's mission is, then it's life without meaning. The whole idea of life is that we accomplish, and the way we accomplish is by working towards a goal without clear knowledge.
And it's the soul that has the mission, though.
Ultimately, it's the soul that has the mission, but the body is the one that's able to fulfill that mission.
Okay, so if the soul comes back in any body, then it has a chance to finish its mission only in that body.
At this point, correct?
Yeah.
You say God doesn't throw anything at us that we can't handle, but God throws things at us that kill us. I mean, certainly that's not being able to handle it.
No, if a person's life ends, then that means that their mission is done. We discussed the child dying at... we discussed... Say, how do you understand the... We discussed this, I believe it was 2 weeks ago. How do you understand the child dying at a young age of 2 or 3? How does a human... What happened there? You know, sometimes the spark just needed a little something, and then it was completed. It moved on. You know, this sometimes can make it easier for people to understand
So what are the
difficulties in this?
That mission is complete.
That segment of the mission and that soul has completed its mission and it moves on.
Just be rationalizing the situation.
Well,
before a certain age, if you die, then it's completing the mission. After a certain age, then it's the parents' fault.
What do you mean?
The years of Kabbalah. If you got an apple for some, like 1 to 12, if the child dies before then the child only had to come back to complete some small thing yet. But if the child dies after that certain age, then it's a problem with the parent.
I don't know about that. What we do know is that.
That's all here and there. The point is, I would suspect that many of us thought in reincarnation, you thought that you would be back. But you're back.
Exactly
you're
as
back.
Is now? Oh, partially.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. Part of you is a very small segment of your spiritual sense.
Well, yeah.
But another part continues. Yeah. You're 100% right. Reincarnation is not recycling. Because recycling, in essence, means that, hey, you have to start from scratch. What we're saying is, no, you don't have to start from scratch, because on some level, you've accomplished something, so that level of the soul continues on the next level of the journey. It's only the segment that didn't accomplish, that wasn't complete, that has to come back.
And what happens when that segment that has to come back is join the old soul?
Because the old soul, remember, it's all part of that stem soul, so it goes back to its original source where that other part of the soul went. It adds to the completion.
So we sort of rejoin the soul that came from
unity.
So a soul that's in a human person could have many very multifaceted, right?
It is multifaceted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of unfinished business for
just
previous levels.
Right. Just like the physical elements of a human is extremely multifaceted, so too the spiritual elements of the human is also multifaceted.
It's interesting because
complex.
It's not as complex, right? It's sort of identified with the person, you know, that person's soul. Oh, where's the end here? There's many souls involved in that soul.
Yeah. It makes us part of the big picture. In other words, we're connected with others. At the same time, we also have a very unique goal.
Speaking of each of us, when we die, you know, the bulk of our soul has a few sparks that may branch off and go back.
I don't know about bulk, but a certain segment, yes, will go back to the stem because you've accomplished at least part of your mission.
So is it either or? In other words, either the entirety goes back to the stem or most goes to the stem and sparks off.
Depending upon how much of the mission was completed.
Right, but that is what happens.
Right.
And then we're going to get to the point where we explain how the original 600,000, which appear to be disturbed by the energy, either created or destroyed.
We're going to get to that. Yeah, let's continue. Let's move on.
Well, that's a very for giving belief, because it says that you wouldn't have to do it perfectly right. You know, there's pieces that can go back to try to accomplish things, but we're not holding the whole class back.
Exactly, pretty much.
Didn't do everything. So that's a very good, very kind, I think,
yes. So now we're going to touch upon why is it so important. What page are we on? We're on page
64.
So, yeah. Why is reincarnation so important? Or why is the idea, the belief of reincarnation so important? So the ideas we touched upon over the past few minutes were several. First of all, understanding where we come from, where we go, explains how we're in, how our mission is interconnected with others. It's not an isolated mission. We're here, we're all here in a combined fashion, number one. Number two, it also gives us a clear understanding that each one of us has an individual persona and soul at the same time. Although we may be big part of the big picture, we're also very individualistic. Very important concepts in Judaism. You're part of the big picture, but you're also an individual. And Judaism puts great emphasis on both, of being part of the community, and at the same time also recognizing that each person is unique and there's nobody else that can fulfill any individual's mission. And ultimately, the idea here is that we all work in harmony to fulfill our common and specific purpose. And one cannot exist without the other. The idea of the commonality and the individuality are interconnected and are dependent on each other. And as you know, it's all on the money. E pluribus unum. Right? It's on every single one of our, for many one, but at the same time we understand that America, above all, is a nation that focuses and pays credence to the power of the individual. So on one hand we say, pluribus unum, but at the other hand we say, hey, every the Bill of Rights, every individual is paramount in our country. So it's a similar thing. Now let's read a little in text 2a about how this process of the souls and how they split up and they went from this and that, so on and so forth, how it works. So let's read 2a.
Yeah. First, there was one soul, father to all of them, and this was the soul of Adam. Afterwards, all souls were included in the souls of the three patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. After that, they were all divided into the souls of the 70 members of Yaakov's family who descended into Egypt, and the 70 souls were divided into 600,000 great sparks.
So there you have it, straight from Shara Gugulim. No. Again, as I mentioned earlier, these were written by Jewish scholars. So they will use terminology, right, of the Jewish people, but this applies to everybody. This is a, especially, don't forget, it all emanates from Adam. And Adam was not Jewish. He was the father of all humanity.
What does this mean?
This tracing is, as I mentioned before, within, everything emanates from Adam,
yes.
Right, the root soul. As souls separate, okay, there's different missions, right? A Jewish person's mission is different from a spiritual standpoint than someone who's, say, from a different religion. And the other religion, their purpose in life is within that realm. So here they're just tracing from Jacob on, because Jacob is referred to as the father of the Israelites, not Abraham and not Isaac either. It's Jacob, and that's what you see here.
Israel.
Exactly. His name was Israel.
But are you saying that as the sparks come back, if they would only go to the Jewish? Could it spark come back and go to someone who is not Jewish? Maybe the next time around a little piece of that goes to someone Jewish and they play the field, so to speak.
It's a good question. It depends if they, on some level, share the same stem. Ultimately, everybody shares the same stem as Adam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although it kind of separates out. But maybe on some level, yeah. It all depends upon if they share the same stem cell.
Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were Jewish.
Abraham, not really.
Well, when he was born, he wasn't.
Huh?
When he was born, he wasn't.
Abraham and Isaac were considered to be the fathers of the monotheistic way of life. On some level, that it's identified with Judaism. Jacob is much more identified with Judaism. Real Judaism didn't come into effect until Moses and the Torah.
Well, okay, biblical.
So they didn't keep the same mitzvahs that we do.
Abraham didn't.
No, because he didn't have the Torah. He didn't have the Torah. Was not given yet.
I've heard commonly heard it.
As Abraham, yes, because
Jewish.
He was the first person.
It's like his mother wasn't Jewish.
Right. No, because he was the first person that lived a monotheistic way of life.
Yeah.
But don't forget, Abraham is also the father of the Ishmaelites of Islam. Right. Isaac had a son named Esau, who was the father of Rome or Edom.
So why aren't converts given the name Ben Yaakov?
Because Jacob is all. Because the concept of converting is tied to belief in one God. And that, Abraham definitely was the first one. He did, but between Adam and Abraham, the world became largely pagan.
Right. So those 600 souls, what I was getting at, those 600 souls can be any religion. I mean, they can be Jews, they can be Christians, they can be whatever, Hindu.
No, this 600 that we're talking about came after Jacob.
Right.
So they're affiliated with Jews, specifically.
So those 600 original sparks...
That's why the number is so small, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know what? To me, the whole idea of a Jewish soul or a Christian soul, or a soul is a soul.
Again, I wouldn't say a Jewish soul or a Christian soul. I would say, remember, we're talking about the stem soul
mm-hmm.
and their source. Every person has a different mission. Just like every person has a different
mm-hmm.
mission, combinations of souls have different missions in life.
Yeah, because I mean, the body, the person had a religion, the soul doesn't have a religion. I mean, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but the soul is a spiritual being. It's not religion.
Well, again, just like a soul has a certain part of this world, right, that it needs to uplift.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happens if that part of the soul finds itself? That soul finds itself in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Its reality is going to be very different than in Zimbabwe.
Right.
And the tools that it's going to have that will enable it to fulfill its mission are going to be drastically
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the same thing applies to a Jewish soul, right? That its tools necessary to accomplish whatever it is in life may require eating matzah on Pesach, right?
But is it a Jewish soul, or is it just a Jewish soul when it's in a Jewish body? And that's my point. My question is: does the soul have a religion? I don't think the soul has a religion. It has a mission, and its mission might be better served in a Jewish body than some other body.
I guess what you're saying is right. Correct.
You know, or in a Zimbabwe.
Agreed. Agreed.
No.
Agreed. And by eating, again, you know, a Jew eating matzah, right, enables him to, or her, to accomplish whatever it needs in its sphere, is equivalent of some Zimbabwean doing whatever he's got to do in, I don't know, what he needs to, yeah.
Whatever that soul
is. Yeah.
If us doing mitzvahs help prepare us for the afterlife, then if we are Jewish, then isn't that part of our afterlife? I mean, the idea that if your soul isn't Jewish, then how can you comprehend the idea of the mitzvah in the afterlife? How it prepares you? A Christian soul wouldn't know that.
But that's why a Christian soul doesn't have to follow the Torah.
Right, well, no, that's why to me it seems like our soul knows that we are Jewish.
If you're born, the way you know is by the circumstances around you in life, similar to whatever circumstances a person comes across in life that are signals that this is maybe what part of my mission is.
Does the soul retain the consciousness of you when you were alive?
In the previous life?
Think of the others. You have one life. When you die, this the texts say that the soul retains consciousness?
Not really, no. I don't remember.
It
does.
You could have reincarnation without having it. Not really a Jewish concept.
It does.
It is, but you don't really have it.
No. In other words, you're asking if the soul itself has physical...
Well, does consciousness die when you die? Is it only a matter of time?
Consciousness is a physical reality. It's a very physical reality. Soul is not physical. It's very spiritual.
True.
Sure.
Is consciousness physical or spiritual?
It's physical. Therefore, it ends
it's
with its...
an electrical waves going up there.
It's a very advanced physical form of the body. That ends when the body ends. There is a spiritual consciousness as well. But the way we think and the way we're able to communicate and the life that we're experiencing now, right, is very different than the spiritual. It's almost impossible for your physical mind to comprehend a spiritual consciousness.
The consciousness is almost a misnomer, like paradise was a misnomer. It was the best word you could come up with.
Pretty much, similar.
So are you saying that because consciousness dies when the body dies, then...
The physical experience of consciousness.
Then you're not going to meet relatives...
No, you will, in a spiritual sense.
But how would we know that?
Again, you're comparing apples and oranges. You're comparing your physical existence to something that's spiritual.
Maybe we could tie it together a little bit.
That's why last week we explained that the concept of paradise, we gave we compared it to the idea of being together with family, having, you know, the concept of unity, that a human being finds it very pleasurable to be together with family, to community, to find common ground with other people. That to us is very important. So paradise on a certain level is the same thing. It's a soul coming full circle. And so definitely the souls of previous generations or loved ones are going to meet up there. They do, you know, specifically because they, chances are they come from the same stem cell as well. So we are going to meet, but it's to say that it's similar to me meeting you and saying hi and smiling,
yeah.
It's probably a lot better than that. It's probably far superior than that.
Hopefully.
No bad breath for starters, exactly.
No breath.
<that's>
no. No brain to recognize no.
Exactly. No. You know. Anyway, okay. So let's move on. As you can see, you have the concept of just like we have stem cells within the world of biology that are able to reproduce and create other cells, so too you have stem souls that are able to produce and create other souls. Did we read 2b? We did. Huh?
No.
Oh. Okay, so let's go to 2b.
Behold, the divine soul of all of Israel is divided into 600,000 particular offshoots. These 600,000 particular souls, roots, each soul differentiates into the 600,000 sparks, each spark being one neshama.
So, as he writes here, you have 600,000 particular stem souls, and they are roots. Each root then is able to create sparks that can then be another soul, in essence. And this process is similar to the mirrors the physical world, where you have the concept of stem cells. So let's now go to 2C.
So 600,000 times 600,000, there's 5 quintillion, 600 quadrillion.
You're saying every single one can, in essence, create an infinite amount.
Yeah.
Every one of those 600,000.
Oh.
Doesn't say 600 times 600.
So this 600 particular souls, however, are root, and each root soul differentiates into 600,000 sparks. 600,000 times 600,000.
And each root soul differentiates into 600. Okay, so there you go. That's pretty much similar to an infinite amount.
Okay, but it's not infinite.
It's not infinite.
It's a finite number.
I guess, yeah. Well, we have a lot of leeway.
A lot of leeway.
Yeah, you're right. 600 particular souls, however, are roots. Each root soul differentiates. Yeah, correct. What you're saying is correct. 600,000 times 600,000. Okay, let's go to 2C.
The six vectors representing the six vector growths that here on the team each contain 10. The source of the 600,000 is thus derived in the four-letter name of God. This is the Vav times 10, which is the Yud to the fifth power, which is the A.
So this concept of 600,000 comes from okay, so here you have it. From one to many.
The connection of the soul to God is compared to the cord comprising 600.
Oh, one second. Not yet. Okay. So that's where the number 600,000 comes from. So it's the six sefirot, which are ethereal concepts or esoteric concepts, and each one gives root to 600,000 that then is multiplied many times over. Okay, we're now going to move on to text 3. And we're going to talk about the concept. Well, let's read it. Let's read text 3. Go ahead.
The connection of the soul to God is compared to a cord comprising 613 strands. The soul is compared to a cord, which is the soul that connects man to God. 613 strands are the 613 faculties of the soul. Why does the soul have 613 components? Man is structured with 248 parts and 365 veins, a total of 613 components. The universe is a microcosm, a macrocosm of the person, which is why throughout all of the spiritual realms everything is comprised of this number. This is also true of the soul, which explains why the soul has 613 faculties, to which the 613 commandments correspond. This soul is the cord connecting a person to God. Just like a cord connects two opposite ends, making them one, similarly, the soul has one end connected above and the other end attached below. This refers to the reflection of the soul, which is enclosed in the body and gives it life.
So basically, what we have here is world creation, in essence, is division. The world is not apparent from the world that we live in. The unity of God is not apparent. Divisive world, strife, so on and so forth. The soul has an ability to unearth and bring to the forefront the unity that's below the surface, the oneness of God. The soul is that connection, and it has, say, 613, similar to 613 mitzvot. 613 cables of sorts that enables it to connect, and through these 613 channels of energy it's able to reveal the unity of the world. So what's happening here is, and the vehicle, right, for this, that enables the body and soul to reveal the unity, are the 613 mitzvot.
I have a question about
that. Yeah.
Not all of the 613 mitzvot are applicable today. So, how does the soul today, reconcile that?
That's correct. We make up that by just studying about them. We have it easier today.
Oh.
Just studying the Torah, reading about it, and we're done. So in essence, it's easier. So there's 248 positive, 365 negative commandments in the Torah, and these become channels of energy that enable us to reveal the unity and the essence of godliness that's found in the world around us. And we're required to use all our faculties in this process. The faculties, the general three faculties that a human has, is the intellect, emotion, and action. Intellect is the mind, right? You have Chachmah. Many of you may be familiar with this Kabbalistic chart. You have knowledge, wisdom, understanding. Then you have emotions, which is kindness, severity, and beauty, right? Mercy, justice, and the combination of mercy and justice. And then you have action, which is Netzach Hod Yesod Malchus. Again, you have emotions such as we discussed this in the previous class, and you have, for instance, the need to survival instinct. You have the need to accomplish in life, which is similar to victory. They use words like that. Anyway, but the basic concept behind this is that we are meant to use, God gives us faculties, and we're meant to use these faculties for the purpose of revealing the true unity in the world that we live in, and ultimately to accomplish our mission. Our specific mission. So let's turn to text 4. Yeah.
The divine soul of all of Israel is divided into 600,000 particular offshoots. When each individual soul therein will fulfill all of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah, are you saying that you're transgressing the 365 prohibitions? So they do not draw, nurture, or receive vitality by means of such transgression. And by observing the 248 positive commandments, thereby drawing down the blessed Ein Sof below, unite with him the entire vital soul, which is in the 248 limbs of the body, in perfect unity, so that they become actually one with him, in accordance with his will, and there be an abode for him in the lower realms. Once the totality of the vital soul of the community of Israel will become a holy vehicle for Hashem, and also the general vitality of this world will also emerge from the root of his soul. In Gan Eden, after the person has died, he will understand all of it.
Skipped a little? What happened? I think you jumped. Yeah, you jumped to text 5. I was thinking that my book is a little different than yours.
Will also emerge from impurity and will ascend to holiness, become a vehicle for Hashem, by the revelation of his glory in the world to come. And all flesh will be all together.
So what we have here is, you see that ultimately, what he's writing very clearly, this goes back to the question you asked before about Jewish souls, non-Jewish souls. He writes that by every, again, he's focusing on the Jewish soul, but he's saying that by the Jewish soul accomplishing what they're supposed to, ultimately it will connect with other souls, and ultimately all of humanity will come to completion. So the real purpose is a global one, but the only way that you can reach global perfection, and the only way the whole world can come to perfection, is only if every single individual on his own, and every single individual within his or her stem soul circle accomplishes what they have to, then all together humanity as a whole can come to completion. So really the ultimate outlook is one of all of humanity, because the goal, our common goal, is to bring the world to perfection. It's not just to care about ourselves, it's not just to care about our kind, it's to care about all of us, because we're all in this together. There may be different paths to get there, but the ultimate goal is the same for all people.
Are these prohibitions and positive commandments, are they together as a list somewhere, or are they scattered throughout the Torah?
They're scattered throughout the Torah, but Maimonides does pull them out and makes them as a list. Yeah, he does that. In the introduction to his main work, it's called. His main work is 14 books. In the introduction, he's got it all laid out there. So basically, this is reiterating what we mentioned before, that we have the mitzvot ultimately are the cables, and these allows the soul to draw divine energy. And ultimately, if a cable is broken, then complete unification will not happen. And it's at that point there will be, it becomes necessary to have reincarnation for that part of the soul which was not unified. So the mitzvot allow for unification between the soul and its source, thus revealing the unity of God within this small partial part of the world that he or she lives in. If that unification is not completed, or that part of the unification, that strand, one of the 613 strands, then that part needs to be completed at a later time. But it's never possible that some part of that mission was not completed, because everybody does good deeds, and most of us do an incredible amount of good deeds. So it's only usually a small segment that needs to be rectified at a later time. We're now going to take this one step further, and as I mentioned, and this is what you're seeing on the board, we're going to read this in text 5. This is the concept of engaging our entire bodies, every single part of our existence and all our faculties for this purpose. Let's read text 5.
Note 2, that a person must observe all 613 commandments in thought, speech, and action. And if the person does not fulfill all 613 in each of the three dimensions mentioned, then the person will need to be reincarnated until they are completed.
Tall order, huh?
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, most of these are not even applicable today. So the way that we just read about them and we study them. So most of them, a lot of them can only be actually intellectually understood.
Maybe we could do some of these and not realize it.
There are a lot of good things we do, we don't realize it. Sometimes you can inadvertently accomplish your mission. It's a very strong possibility. Very strong.
What if only a spark goes forward and the rest of it is solid? How does that soul attach to another soul?
Heavenly.
I don't think it's so heavenly.
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 I urge you.
All right, let's go to text 6.
Inevitably,
basically, what he's saying here is that he's taking one of these four levels we mentioned earlier, right? We mentioned before you have the intellect, the emotion, and speech. He's saying, for instance, when you study the Torah using your mind to truly engage your mind on all levels, there are four general understandings to each element within the Torah. One is called pshat, the literal understanding. The second one is called remez, the hinted understanding or implied. The third is derush, allegorical, and finally the mystical. So he's saying if you truly want to accomplish in its entirety the intellectual understanding of a Torah idea, you must use, say, these four various approaches. And then you have completed that element. Let's now skip to text 8. Kind of running on time, so I'm going to skip a little here. Before we read it. So now, we're going to read a little more about let's back up for a second. We talked about Adam. Adam being the first soul. Had Adam not sinned, in essence, there would have never been a need for reincarnation. Right? He ate from the tree of knowledge. Had he not eaten from the tree of knowledge, then all of us would have not been here, because the world would have been at its perfection. Nothing would have ever happened. So on some level, we're taught, the fact that Adam ate from the tree of knowledge, it's called a sin, but in essence, he did the greatest favor for all of us. By him sinning, we're here today, and we have a purpose and a mission, and we're able to accomplish this. So had he not done that, who knows if all of this would have ever happened. The concept of when we say Adam, it's Adam and Eve. Because the belief within Judaism is that a husband and wife are one soul separated into bodies that are meant to then come together. And that's how they're able to complete their missions together. So it's really Adam and Eve were one soul, as it is, soulmates, exactly. It's a very Jewish concept. And as we discussed in a previous lesson, I forget where, the idea of divorce means that a soul can have several, needs to be with several people. It's possible. You know, several soulmates. And that's why sometimes, you know, the concept of marriage and divorce is one the Torah says. You can get divorced and marry another person if it's needed. And so the question now is, what can cause what are the causes that necessitate the sparks to reincarnate? And there are several. One is, first of all, if a person commits a sin and never rectified it. That's number one. Number two, if a person did not have a chance or had a chance but didn't perform a good deed of sorts that came across his or her way, didn't take the opportunity, and we touched upon some of these. Another one is, if a person came across another person and was meant to guide or help that person in their mission and didn't accomplish it. So then not only will that soul need to come back, but that soul will need to come back and reconnect with that spark that it was meant to guide, because they have to meet again at some level in order to both complete their missions. Or if a spark did not have, or a soul did not have the opportunity to be elevated through marrying or meeting its soulmate, sometimes it will have to return to meet its soulmate. So let's look at text 8. Very interesting understanding or real application of two people in history who actually reincarnated.
Just a question about Adam then. In the Christian Judaism, then, that maybe Adam's mission was to elevate Adam?
It wasn't sense, maybe.
So that we would exist and then play out this part for this? So
that's correct. On some level, yes. Eve definitely was aware. Her objective was, and we discussed this in the previous class, Eve definitely was aware. The reason why the snake first went after Eve is because, just without digressing too much, it's because Eve is a nurturer. By nature, she wants to change the world and make it a better place. Man is more of a conqueror. Not interested in change. He's more interested in just changing things to the way he likes it. So he went after Eve because Eve was more susceptible to the message that if you eat from the tree of knowledge, your eyes will open, and the world then will need nurturing. It would need to be uplifted. So he was feeding on her need to want to uplift the world, to want to make change, to want to make the world a better place, which was impossible beforehand. And she then went to Adam and convinced him of this idea. So, in essence, there was something good to that, because ultimately it played out that it's good, although what they did may have not been good at the time, but the ultimate goal ended up being good, because she ultimately did repent for what she did. And we were left now with a world that enables us to make meaningful change. So, yeah.
So what's unknown was whether that was an admission or not, but you could certainly reframe it in the sense that there was
definitely
the drama that played out that.
Exactly. And there was definitely a good side to it. In other words, it wasn't all evil. It wasn't all sin. Yeah. Okay, text 8.
Devorah. The prophetess was a reincarnation of Tzipporah, the wife of our teacher, Moshe. May he rest in peace. Because at the time that the Jewish people sang praises to God at the sea, she was not with them, and she was pained by this.
So Zipporah, who was Moses' wife, happened to be in Midian with his Moses' children at the time of the Exodus. So she wasn't there when the Jews left Egypt and prayed and sang praise. However, her soul was uniquely Tzipporah, actually it means bird, which is to sing, a songbird. Her soul was uniquely part of her soul's mission was to sing praise. And she missed out that opportunity. So she was therefore reincarnated as Deborah the prophetess several hundred years later, who then, as the biblical story tells us, when she was the judge, a leader of the Jewish people at that time, and she was victorious in battle over Sisera, who was a king, I believe an Amorite king, who attacked the Jews. And she was victorious. And then we have the song, and she then composed a song of that victory. So Deborah, in essence, ended up singing praise to God, and that was her. She rectified what Tzipporah, in her lifetime, was not able to. So here we see a clear, the capacity for song was through Tzipporah was realized through Deborah, hundreds of years later. So here we see a clear connection between two people. That one had to fulfill the mission that the other was not able to, even though Tzipporah was a great woman. She was Moses' wife. Behind every great man is a greater woman. She was probably greater than Moses, right? So exactly. So now the big question is, and this came up throughout our class tonight several times, how do we know? How do we know what exactly we have to do to accomplish our soul's mission? We just spent an hour and a half saying how important it is to accomplish the mission. The mission, it's our soul, it's connected with on a specific individual level, it's connected on a community level, it's connected on a global level. Ultimately, everything we do is connected to a global mission for all of humanity. Billions of people, that's a huge task. How do we know? How do we know what it is that we have to do? Where's the marching orders? So, the answer to that is, first and foremost, that on a general sense, the Torah enlightens us to the general things we have to do, both in a positive sense and in a negative sense, or from, in other words, what we shouldn't do and what we should do, how to live a moral life. That's something that all of us share in common. That's all of humanity. And the specifics of every single individual, as we discussed and as I mentioned several times, is tied into the scenarios and opportunities that come your way. Our belief system tells us that everything is divine providence. Things don't just happen. They may seem random, but there is no random things in life. So if something comes your way, however random it may seem to you, there's a purpose. And our mission is to try to find that purpose and make it important. I'll tell you an interesting story that happened to a friend of mine that in a minute that just came to mind that gives you an idea of how unrandom things in life are. So chances are, Judaism tells us, that what we need to accomplish is right before your very eyes. Let's look at text 9. Who's turn? We're starting over.
Ever since God told our father Abraham, go from your land, and it is then written, Abraham kept traveling southward. We have the beginning of the mystery of rectifying the spark. By decree of divine providence, people travel to the place where the sparks that they must purify await their redemption.
So it was starting with Abraham. Abraham had to travel and wander because he was traveling his life's mission. He was running after the sparks that he needed to uplift, the part of the world that he needed to uplift, the sparks that he needed to rectify, in essence. And finally, let's read text 10. Text 10 is a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe of blessed memory to a person who wrote to him about a personal issue. In general, sometimes great people of great spiritual abilities are able on some level to help guide people and help them understand what their life's mission may be. A Rebbe, for instance, is a great spiritual leader who is able to do that. So let's look at text 10.
You tell me you are given the proper amount of tzedakah. However, your shalom bias, harmony in the family relationships, situation needs great improvement. The fact that you are having great difficulties in this area is a sign that this mitzvah has not been completed in your previous life. The Holy Azareel teaches us that the most souls living in a body have been here before. The reason they come back again is to fulfill those mitzvahs that they did not do properly the first time around. These mitzvahs that they did complete in their previous lifetime do not require any more refinement, and therefore their observance is easy. However, these mitzvahs that one did not complete in a previous lifetime are the ones most difficult to do. The negative inclination targets those non-completed mitzvahs as the ones to oppose most. The fact that the issue of shalom bias is so difficult for you to prove, for you proves that it is a mitzvah that needs fulfillment. In your past lifetime, you did not refine this mitzvah. Now is your opportunity.
So this is obviously a person wrote and said, look, you know, harmony in the home is just non-existent. Can't get along with my wife, so on and so forth. So he answered, look, the fact that you're having such a difficult time means that you have to put more effort in because this is part of your mission. If it were easy, chances are that that's something that you don't have to rectify. So ultimately, looking at this, looking at life in this way, helps us understand and deal with life's challenges. Something that's difficult is not necessarily difficult because God's trying to make life for us difficult. On the contrary, it's difficult because this is an integral part of what we need to accomplish. People go through difficult periods in life, suffering. Suffering is not a punishment. It's not something that you did wrong. Sometimes it's because your soul needs to perfect in a way, or needs to perfect something, and the suffering is a side effect of what needs to be done. So ultimately, life's occurrences are not random. It's not something that just happens out of the blue. Life's occurrences are very integral and very critical to the greater picture of what we need to accomplish. So where we were before, we're not sure. Where exactly where we're going to be next, we're also not sure. But one thing we know for sure is that what unfolds today in our lifetime is for our soul's greater good in this lifetime and the next. And our actions today are meant to bring completion to the soul and to the entire world. So, key points for tonight. One, reincarnation is not recycling an old soul, but the process of a new offshoot continuing the mission begun by a general soul. Two, we are united in three ways. A, they stem from a single source. They function as many organs of a single organism working together for a common goal. And C, they will ultimately reveal the essence that unites them all by revealing God's oneness in creation. Three, we all share a common source and goal, but we each have our own unique identity and personal assignment within the global mission. Four, each root soul must fulfill every mitzvah and learn all of the Torah in order to reveal completely the godliness in that soul and its portion of the world. Five, when every root soul completes this process, this brings Mashiach, or Messianic era, brings the world to completion. Six, we are given our specific talents and possessions, and we are each guided through life based on our own unique mission. Seven, areas in life that come easily to us are those that were already rectified in the previous Gilgul. Gilgul is reincarnation. Those areas that are difficult still need to be refined. And finally, understanding the Gilgulim or reincarnations helps us see the fusion of a global plan within our personal life. Next week, the eternal bond.
What was the story you were going
to? I'll tell you the story in a minute. If you haven't gotten the email about our trip to Israel, read it, because we have another 3 weeks to get tickets. And if anybody can come, we'll definitely love this trip. It's unbelievable, and it's priced reasonably too. So just let me know if you're going to join us, and we'll make the tickets and we're off. My commission? I wish there was a commission. I gotta pay like everybody else. But it's a wonder. Did you see the details of the trip? Unbelievable.
Like a very busy, great.
Who hasn't been to Israel here yet? Oh wow. Whoever hasn't been should definitely think of doing it. It's a once in a lifetime experience. Anyway, the story I want to tell you happened to a friend of mine. If you have time, it's only 5 minutes. When we were rabbinical students, so they would assign us at about the age of, let's say, 18 or 19, to different yeshivas across the world for a year or 2 years. Just you go to that yeshiva and you study, right? It's kind of like a, you know, you help out the far-flung yeshivas that don't have a lot of older students. Kind of the process of becoming a rabbinical student. So one day, I had a colleague by the name of Rabbi Yosef Kanakov, a friend of mine in my class, and he was assigned to the yeshiva in Sydney, across the world. One day, a woman walks in with her 12-year-old son and says, you know, I want to start teaching my son bar mitzvah. So he goes, fine. He sits him down, they start. Turns out, this kid couldn't even read Hebrew. He had absolutely nothing to do with any Jewish, nothing to do with Judaism, absolutely nothing. So it took him, you know, they slowly started teaching him about the bar mitzvah, and it was a very lengthy process. And, you know, after it came close to the day of the bar mitzvah, and, you know, he tells his mother, you know, your son's pretty much ready, but I'm just curious. Tell me. What is it that, you know, you don't seem, you know, you don't live a Jew, there's nothing about you that, what made you one day bring your 12-year-old son into the yeshiva to start learning about the bar mitzvah? She said, to be honest with you, I would have never done it. But I was on a trip to New York about half a year ago. I'm driving one Saturday on the New York State Thruway, and out of the blue, I see a guy with a beard and a hat just like you, and he flags my car down, and he starts talking to me, and he asks me, are you Jewish? He goes, yeah. And he tells me, so I'm telling him I have a 12-year-old, so whatever, and he says, you must teach him to be bar mitzvah. So I promised him. I mean, how often in the middle of New York State, in the middle of nowhere, do you meet? It just doesn't happen. And I said, okay. I agreed. So I followed through with my promise. Fine. Fast forward about a half a year, and we're by our national convention. And there's another classmate of mine. His name is Yisrael Chanan. And we were all together at a table, we get together once a year, we're talking. And Yisrael Chanan is telling a story. This was about 10, 15 years ago. He says, it was a Friday afternoon, he says, and I was supposed to go to the Catskills, a group of us, four, five of us in a car, because that's where everybody goes for the weekend. The guy who was driving, just his directions were terrible, and instead of getting on the 80 and the 87, he got on the 80, right? So instead of getting on the thruway, before we know it, 4 hours later, we had gone 4 hours in the opposite direction. And it's too late. You can't get to the Catskills. It's almost Shabbos. We don't know what to do. We checked into a hotel in the middle of nowhere. We're four guys just here. And he said, I'm sitting Shabbos afternoon twiddling my stomach. And I said, there's got to be a reason why I'm here. Why would God play such a cruel trick? So I just walked to the thruway and started flagging cars down. He's telling, and he says, I flagged the car down. A woman from Sydney stops and she starts talking to me. She's telling me she's Jewish. I got her to promise that she's going to bar mitzvah his son. And my other friend is sitting there. The complete story came. Exactly. How often does that happen? Usually you don't see the big picture, right? It just happened to be these two got together. He was bored. What does a 19-year-old do on this Saturday afternoon? Don't forget, he was 18 years old.
Would you go on the I-5 flag?
I guess that it's either that or it's either that or tipping cows.
That's very dangerous.
I guess, yeah. He wasn't on the thruway actually, because the thruway is up to the Catskills. He was on the 80.
Oh, the 80 is an interstate.
It's also an interstate. It goes east-west. Yeah.
West coast.
Yeah. 80 goes east-west. 87 goes north-south.
Well, he figured out that there was a reason God put them
there. Ah, look at that 12-year-old kid with bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Look at that, it's no small thing. New York, Sydney, it all came together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually the little part that you do, you don't see the connection.
You don't see the connection. Yeah. Very seldom do you see the big picture like this. Yeah. They just happen to be in the same table.
Well, that's a very inspiring story.
It is.
That's why I decided to share it. I was inspired by it.
Yeah. You had a